baby, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Hand him on my whoa, 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 whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is visual artist Tad Savinar. His show Musings from the Future is on now through February 25th at PDX Contemporary Art. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus, Tad.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Never had you on the show before.
No.
Nor met you, but I've known your name for a long time.
In a half an hour, we'll be old friends.
You did a show in 2020, and it was all COVID time. And
right.
No one could go.
Yeah.
You know, it was sort of behind closed doors. But you've brought one of those pieces with you, and it sort of kickstarts this new show. And the piece is just called America 2020. It's this beautiful digital print, very tall rectangle, probably like 5 feet tall, maybe six. And the top square is blue, dark blue, then there's a sort of royal blue band, then white. And at the very bottom of the white is a photo, I think, because it has a shadow of a bug kind of on its back, either dying or it fell and is trying to get up.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is.
And this is a metaphor.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, are we the bug? Is somebody else the bug? Is our country the bug on its back? Is it climate on its back? Who knows? But I mean, that sense of being in a predicament, I think is something we all know. But it seems like there's a lot of predicaments. Life has gotten complex. This is as you said, you know, it's kind of from the last show, but it's here because it really was I've been working for quite some time, and you know, 5-7 years, on working in a vein that combines a very 70s contemporary art modernist approach to color and form, but combining it with representational images. So it's kind of bringing a sense of beauty to that coldness and seeing if they can share the same space. And so this is important to me because it was pivotal when I think I first kind of got it right, mm-hmm. if you will.
Who are some of the artists from that era that made these big color bands?
Well, in the realm, I mean, there's Moskowitz, there's Donald Judd used color in an extraordinary way.
You took that style.
That very cold, cold, detached, but it's so smart. And I find it, when it's done correctly, very alluring. And that has always stuck with me through. If it isn't the color, it's that crispness. My work has pretty much been crisp.
Mm-hmm.
And so that colors, the color field thing seems to really work with what I'm trying to do. So
mm-hmm.
This is an important piece for me.
Mm-hmm. Is that a drawing of a bug?
It's no, so it's a photograph of a bug I got online. I searched mm-hmm. for the right bug. I didn't want it to be a cockroach.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted the bug to have some beauty, and you'll notice this kind of has some green and orange in it.
It's a
human bug. It's got qualities. It's not ooh, I hate bugs kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's a pleasant bug.
Uh-huh.
But it's in a bad condition.
And it's probably like 3 or 4 inches wide, but it's at the bottom of this.
Yeah, and it's very diminished by this, by the main image. And so in my mind, you know, there's a horizon, there's an otherness with the color. The bug is clearly in our, you know, in the moment that mm-hmm. we're standing here. So it suggests a past or a otherness, the blue dust. What is it doing?
Then you have these three, I think they're brass, am I correct?
They're cast bronze sculptures, and they are on stainless steel shelves directly affixed to the wall.
And all three of them are buildings, but they're miniature buildings. They're
right.
Even smaller than dollhouses, you know.
They're HO railway scale.
And they're extremely precise. I mean, the casting is very mm-hmm. sharp edges and great detail. Looking at them from right to left, there's one called 2020 lockdown, and this is, what do you call it, a ranch house? Or?
A suburban home.
Traditional suburban
home. One-car garage, actually.
Oh, okay. And all the windows are bulging, and it's like, is that curtains? Is that foam?
It's stuff.
It's just the
amount of stuff that we all packed into our home psychologically during lockdown, and the family togetherness imposed structure, and I think it was a time when our houses were fuller of conversations and what you're going to do and what you're not going to do, and just an unfamiliar time. Mm-hmm. But there was a huge amount of pressure on our homes and what goes on. And so this is kind of just expressing all of that stuff trying to be contained by the home, and it's just oozing out of the windows.
Mm-hmm. And then next to it is a home, sort of a wested home with a veranda that's been destroyed by a huge brass ball. You know, it's a different color, it's more golden, and it's just landed on this house and smashed the top floor in. It's called Sputnik 4. It doesn't have the Sputnik
points.
Antenna.
No, it's because the first Sputnik was of course the satellite. Sputnik 2 was Russian TV, was called Sputnik. And the third Sputnik was the Russians' version of the COVID
vaccine.
And so this is Sputnik 4.
Oh, okay.
So this is the next Sputnik.
I didn't know any of that. What does Sputnik mean?
I don't know.
Russian.
I'll have to find out. That's a good question.
So this is Sputnik.
Again, with the work, this kind of sense of, we used to kind of know what the patterns of life were, and in the last few years we've seen an upheaval in those norms, and mm-hmm. so things come at us, these unnatural things seem to be occurring at a more regular rate.
Mm-hmm. So the third in this series is Hand of God.
Again, it's a church. It could be any building. It's mm-hmm. not an anti-religious piece, but it is. We do hold the church sacred. Some of these things, these upheavals and changes in culture can happen anywhere. And this, again, is an unknowing event.
This is a big gold fist punching through a church roof right to the floor.
It is. It's my hand, actually. It's a cast of my hand.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's just that we're in a topsy-turvy time. You know, that's the artist's job. The artist's job is to reflect what they see or what they feel. Mm-hmm. And this is what I'm reflecting. Mm-hmm. It's not a solution. It's not a it's not a criticism. It just is. This is what I'm thinking. This is what I'm seeing. This is what I'm feeling right
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm. Let's walk around the corner here in PDX Contemporary into the main room, and you have these two big prints, framed prints. They're both digital prints. So you took imagery, in one of them it's books, in another it's magazines, and photograph them, arrange them, you compose them in Photoshop, and then start adding colors. So to the one called Nighttime Reading, you added a blue kind of wash,
right,
and then these black horizontal bars.
So the blue is like a veil. You know, it keeps the information a little bit from the viewer, so it makes it a little mysterious and cloudy and unknown. The black bars kind of negate information. So what you have is an image that is veiled, and there's a little psychological distance, and then there's things withheld. So it tries to create that same kind of psychological underpinning to things that we're not sure how mm-hmm. they're going to, a mystery or concern or worry.
Mm-hmm. But these are all books that you would read anxiously, trying to find out what the hell's going on.
Exactly,
in the world, right?
Exactly.
Future wars, the end of your world, end times, nuclear biological survival manual. I think I had that when I was a kid. The uninhabitable Earth, life after warming, fear of a black
universe.
It's not a Public Enemy record.
Yeah.
And fear your future. Now, were you actually reading these?
Yeah, some of them.
Yeah. What was the effect on you of like reading this stuff at bedtime or at night?
Well, this one was The Uninhabitable Earth, by David Wallace, was really, it's just a very clear and orderly description of his thinking of how things are breaking down. I think one of the things that I found most interesting was the discussion of how right now our culture and the world culture is actually based on the success of business. That's kind of what everybody orbits around. Fine. There's a time when we may not use the business model as our main modus operandi, because we may be spending more time working on our own personal survival, less electricity or mm-hmm. climate change or whatever, social unrest or all those things. And so that's a fascinating shift that could mm-hmm. occur, is to really focusing not on business but on personal and familial survival, mm-hmm. safety. That was really I think also in that book it said it is, was it 140 million migration, or pardon, million climate migration people migrating to leave the place that they're in 2030. Mm-hmm. So you have places that people are, you know, there was an article in the paper the other day about the beavers in Oregon are starting to migrate north. Mm-hmm. They're finding that they're moving up. Mm-hmm. So that's obviously the animals know what's going on.
Also, I mean, I think, you know, there are all these books that are well researched, but they're depressing. And the alternative is you're just trying to pretend they're not out there and don't read them and just ignore them. Is that something to do with the bars and the negation?
Well, some of these are quackery. You know, I mean, they aren't all. It's a random sampling, if you will. But the bars, it holds the participant at bay a little bit, and the colors and the structure of the image itself relates very much, as you can, you know, to the blue piece with the bug. You know, it's that beautiful, but cool in its. In its colors and its graphics. So how can, you know, that blue is gorgeous. So the notion of presenting imagery that may not be something we all are looking forward to, it can still be beautiful. So I've always tried to seduce the viewer with beauty first. That's the first. It's got to look good. Mm-hmm. And then when people get up closer, they find that there's... So purely from an abstract sense, you know, regardless of content, I think they operate. And then the key is to be seductive enough that somebody really wants to. It's not a painting of a tree.
The one that kind of pairs with it is called Desire Denied. It's from 2022, and it's a really tall print. The main color is a sort of violety purple. It's magazine covers 4x8, I think. Mm-hmm. And then so the colors are dimmed by this purple.
Right, it's like a veil.
Yeah. But it's the magazines we all see, like in Fred Meyer's, you know, Harper's, Martha's Weddings, Traditional Home, Mindfulness, Best Baking. But each one has a big fat black circle right in the middle, and it's big enough, you know, they vary in size, so they're not just regular dots, but they vary in size by what they're trying to cover up, right? If it's a close-up of a face or...
Right. So in the Best of Baking, you don't get to see the pie. You just see the black dot.
Right, you see the crust.
You see the crust.
So this desire denied, or who is denying what?
Well, I think that we're living through a time when we've just gotten out of 2 years of lockdown. And during that period, I think a lot of people's dreams and aspirations change. I think that the notion of thinking about that vacation or thinking about that new car, all that stuff, kind of everything went on hold. Additionally, there's a huge, as we know, gap in our culture between the haves and the have-nots, which is just widening even more. And there are some people who can't even buy the magazine, you know? So this disparate notion of who gets to consume the culture and who our current popular culture is for or... is, I think, an interesting thing to raise right now.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Tad Savinar. He's talking about Musings from the Future, which is his show on now at PDX Contemporary Art through February 25th. Next to that one is a kind of a sight gag, right? It's a beautiful piece of plum-colored silk hanging very high on the wall. It just says death in capitals in the middle in this gold lettering. And then you have to come up and stand on one of those vinyl dots that we all had to stand on for lining up during the pandemic. This one says, please keep your distance, wait here. And you say, you know, it's kind of like being in line, but what are you looking at really?
You're facing it, certainly it was disease that we were trying to distance ourselves from, but ultimately it wasn't the disease, it was death. No one wanted to die. Mm-hmm. So this is an opportunity to face that last step before, however it happens.
It's a beautiful piece of silk.
Thank you.
And you got it on this, this comes on a kind of backer board, right?
Yeah,
and
they can print yeah, it? Yeah, it's not a board, but a very thick medium of some kind. And it's run through the printer, stiff, so that the silk remains completely flat mm-hmm. and intact. And then after it's printed, you peel off the back.
Mm-hmm. So. And there's no way these letters are going to come off.
No.
They're fused
into the silk. Into the silk, yeah.
Yeah. Right. And that was Push Dot, right?
Push Dot's, dude. They're everybody's favorite. Yeah, they're fantastic.
They'll do anything,
right.
basically.
Right.
They'll figure out a way to make
to print
things
whatever,
that
yeah.
are really professional.
Yeah.
You have a huge painting size piece. It's the white clock faces, which I think are paper, right?
There are some metal, some vinyl, some paper. Yeah. They're all on there.
From old analog clocks. I recognize some of the fonts, those curly twos and threes. And so you pull the faces off, so there's faces, no hands or anything. Just the hole in the middle where the motor goes. And you've collaged these in a big rectangle, but you've got this kind of cut out, this black edging on the central rectangle, mm-hmm. which is kind of confusing. It's like he slapped on black paint. Did you make it run to the left and right?
Yes, gravity? I squeegeed it.
Yeah. Why did you have that intervention?
I wanted to use a graphic device to kind of put a exclamation point on the notion of infinite time. And so it's a graphic device because it kind of obscures the edges a little bit and your eyes tend to focus on the inside, and it plays a little trick where it almost looks like the inside is on kind of some kind of hyper focus mm-hmm. as opposed to the outside edges. So it's kind of like mm-hmm. saying, no, you don't hear me. See, I'm really talking about this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's a graphic device. So the clock faces were interesting. I was in a antique store a year ago or something, and there was a stack of clock faces.
Oh, so you didn't have to buy all the clocks.
Well, I thought about buying them, but I didn't buy them. And then it was bugging me so much. I got to get clock faces, you know, because I'm going to do something with them, you know. This happens a lot. I'll hear a phrase, I'll see an image or something, and I think, this is important, but I don't really know what to do with it yet. And so I went online and I ordered many, many, many clock faces.
Vintage?
Some vintage and some. I mean, there are so many companies across the country uh-huh. that are printing this stuff.
Really?
This is like, or have it in the closet in the back, okay. you know, I mean, whatever. Right. It was really strange, but I found multiple locations uh-huh. where I could, so I just started ordering them, not really paying any, you know, that was not trying to get a certain kind of clock face. I just want a bunch of them, and I got them, of course, and then I was faced with that dilemma. What are these? Why are they here? What is there about them?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I was telling Jane the other day, my first step was I put them all over the floor in the studio, so when I came in to the studio every day, I walked on clocks. It was a way of, and I've used this device before, like completely changing what one thinks, you know, to kind of jog your brain. You
mm-hmm.
know? Like it's like painting with a broom, you mm-hmm. couldn't really manage it, you know, so it forces a different mm-hmm. outcome, the one that is not planned. So I had them on the floor and I thought, well, gee, I think I'm going to do the entrance to the gallery. It's going to all be covered with cloth. You know, it's like, okay. And then it slowly progressed to the realization that I wanted them to be vertical. I wanted them to be seen as an object rather than, you know, tiles. I collaged these clocks onto this panel structure and always intended to make this frame and did a little study, small. We have a very interesting relationship with time, depending upon how old you are and what's going on, or, you know, as seen in some of these pieces, the unknown, where things are upside down. I don't know about this. So, you know, time is used as this occurred at this certain time, or meet me at the fountain at this time, or it's dinner time, whether you're hungry or not. And so I want to kind of take that specific time and place notion of a clock and just say, it's just time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a continuum. You know, it's clock, it's time, it's time, 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 time.
Was any of this inspired by the kind of lockdown mentality of working from home, being stuck home, looking at the clock, time dragging?
It probably could have been. I mean, certainly time did stand still. You know, this is not specifically related to that, but I think it birthed this in some way, that notion of time. You know, it's not about my parking meter is up. It's not. It's a completely. It has nothing to do with humans. It's time. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't lasso it for our own uses as much as it just is.
You've said that you get an idea and then you can sort of think, how am I gonna realize this idea? Would it be a bumper sticker? Will it be a
right.
metal sculpture?
Right.
Would it be a painting?
Right.
Which I love that idea because you said long ago you decided to outsource fabrication
right.
to people who could do it better.
Yeah.
Which is probably very liberating, right?
Oh, it's fantastic. You know, and people say, oh, you mean collaboration? I said, well, not really. I'm still a control freak, and I'm trying to get to a certain destination with my work. So I generally develop the idea myself and know what I want. And then I do work with the fabricators. Often they'll have a suggestion to make something better technically, or, you know, had I considered this. But for the most part, it's me directing the work of others who are more talented than myself.
So this piece, it's another shelf piece. It's a container for two opposing views. And it's on this lovely gold carved wooden shelf that kind of looks like a plant holding up a curved shelf. And then on top, in great contrast, two stainless steel cylinders sort of machined with a grain horizontally, slightly curved tops and bottoms. And then they're joined by these four flat steel bars that are crisscross, two crosses. So it's kind of like if two people were holding each other's faces, or, you know, they're locked together. And this is about an abstract concept of views, people's
I think
ideas.
We have become increasingly polarized, certainly at the most obvious, it seems like, is the political climate. In this object, the two cylinders are hollow or have something in them, an idea perhaps, and then this joining by these flat bars. They're, so that each cylinder is welded together like a prisoner, like a co-joined twin. But in this case, there is no communication there between these cylinders. It's impossible to exchange ideas. There's no way to do it. There, mm-hmm. So it's really about that kind of state where everything has become so entrenched that there's no communication whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But it continues on.
Do you ever wonder if you're wrong and that things aren't really that bad and it's just you changing over?
I think about that all the time. What's interesting is that in the illustrated essay that Linda Tessner did for the show, she brings this up. I'm very interested in looking at something that's going on in our culture today and exaggerating it. In other words, this is going on, but I think what would happen if it was taken to its furthest extreme? Then I land there on the furthest extreme. People tend to look at this thing, no, that's never going to happen. maybe. Things. And Linda in the essay recounts a number of times where I've made work that then is, you know, 5 or 7 years later spot on. So.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
It predicts the future?
Well, I don't want to say I predict the future, but I tend to identify things that are not as bad right now mm-hmm. as they could be.
They are getting worse.
It's funny, in a urban design project I worked on in Phoenix for 10 years, the light rail system, I came on and I was only one of two people in the urban design department, because I've had a lot of experience in that. So they came up with a nickname for me in the agency, and they called me Chicken Little the Prophet, because they said, Tad, you tell us what's going to happen 6 months in advance, and we always say, when it happens, we'll fix it. We're not going to fix it now. And so I have that nature just in my life of like, okay, what if we follow this thread all the way out, what are the possibilities? So.
That's what, I mean, reading about you, I didn't know you were involved in like city planning or light rail planning in Oregon, right?
All over the country.
Right, but it started in Portland.
Yes, that's correct.
And that led to more gigs?
Yeah.
What, did they always approach you the same way as the artist who's not a trained city planner?
No, I got into my second and third light rail system as an artist, but then I slowly started to alter my approach mm-hmm. and got more into the, actually by the end of my career, 20-year career, I was writing the urban design guidelines that told the architects how to design, the design values, how the engineers should design. Was also had to get agreement by neighborhoods, and by the mayor and city council. So mm-hmm. it's kind of like a deal broker. Mm-hmm. But I wrote them. Traditionally, these guidelines were always written by engineers, so it was mm-hmm. very technical.
Yeah.
And I figured out a way to write it so everyone could understand it, including the architects and engineers.
Oh, wow.
But the citizens could understand it. So it was like an agreement. It was a very different approach to mm-hmm. urban design guidelines, which I then did a lot of systems. Someone said, you know, why would you work on light rail? What's, you know, I said, God, look, it's a train that you're building, a new train through a city, through grandma's house and through the parks. And, it involves, you know, every human, you know, every kind of trade, every kind of construction trade, every kind of land use process. I mean, it's this giant thing. And it's just fascinating. You know, mm-hmm. there's always something to figure out.
I think it's just amazing that you stepped out of the art studio and into this totally other world. I think it probably has more effect on the world than art.
Yeah, it might, yeah, affecting how people lead their life every single day, you know.
Yeah.
But
over by the door, you have a few prints, and there's two that really jump out. The one is white versus light blue. It's a fold over. It says evolution. So you did finger paint in black in paint, and then folded the paper and squished it down,
right.
And then unfolded it. So you have this mirror image of
correct
evolution, you know, the word broken into nine letters, but the print side is a bit fainter,
right?
And then you took the whole thing and digitized it, put in the light blue background, and had it digitally printed.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like a you know, painting,
mm-hmm.
hand painted, but mm-hmm. it's a print. And then 90 degrees from that, you have another one. It's Napoleon's horse. Mm-hmm. You only see Napoleon's finger in his red cape. But the horse is looking terrified. So you have that mirrored, and then between that you have a Rorschach blotch, which is sort of, I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
I don't know what shape that is.
Yeah.
Just tell us why that Napoleon with that shape?
That painting, it's a famous painting of Napoleon heading up the Alps. And I've always been fascinated by it because the horse is so terror-stricken, it seems like, and Napoleon is pointing to the top, saying "Onward!" You know. But again, here's another example. These Rorschachs, that I call them, this one here with Napoleon's horse, and then the one you were just talking about, evolution, were part of a series I started in 2017. Again, working on that notion of accidental, organic, combined with a very cool modernist color sense, and that's something that I'll continue to do, trying to find that that blend. I don't know exactly why I find. Maybe it's my own mortality that I'm dealing with. I don't know, but this has really grabbed me the last, what is that? You know, 5 years, and that combination of the cool modernist and then life as we know it is the life that as we know it is increasingly become less that we know about it,
mm-hmm.
not more. There's more up for grabs or in process of change for someone who is my age. Kids may be normal for them, but.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was visual artist Tad Savina. His show Musings from the Future is on now through February 25th at PDX Contemporary Art in Northwest Portland. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus, Tad.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.